I think that's how I grew up. The pain is kind of part of the job, and you just fight through.
You're listening to The Dig.
What is up, Nuggets fans? This is The Dig. I'm Nick, joined by Jeremy. How are things in Philly, Jeremy?
Never really changed. Actually, it's not really that cold. How about that for a change? I'll take that.
It's snowing in Denver. Today we got a couple inches.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's snowing in Oakland. Did you hear Mike Mayock was put as the new GM of the Raiders?
No, what?
Yeah, what is that? What's next? Like Stephen A. Smith is the new Lakers GM?
I don't really want to talk about football right now since
why is that?
I'm a Broncos fan.
Mm-hmm.
Probably move on to better things to talk about.
Like the Nuggets.
The Denver Nuggets, who have survived. We're coming off a stretch where the Nuggets went 8-4 in December. That was despite having, you know, basically an entire NBA team worth of injuries.
Yep.
And they beat some good competition. They look solid. They're still in first place in the Western Conference. And now we're starting to get all of the pieces back. And we're going to finally have a chance to see what this team actually can be with a fully healthy roster.
The theme.
They're getting healthy. You know what's interesting? Let me interject this. It's a little bit off topic, but you mentioned, I just started thinking about it when you mentioned who we were actually winning these games with. We went 8-4 in December, and you compare us to last year's roster, and we've got guys who sometimes weren't even getting garbage time minutes, who are now playing 30 minutes a game. Beasley over the past few weeks.
Was anyone sure coming into the season that Beasley was like an every game player?
Right. No. I don't think so. I don't think you could say that. And then our two G League players from last year are playing almost starters minutes between Craig and Morris. Yeah. So, and this is who we're winning games with. So it's just interesting to take a step back. This is a team that came up short of a playoff run last year. And this year, we're taking last year's team and we're scraping the bottom of the barrel and playing with those guys, the bottom of the barrel players from last year's team that didn't make the playoffs. And we're 8-4 in December and holding on to first place.
A lot of the credit has to go to Tim Connelly, who has clearly drafted well and built a really deep roster of young talent.
And Michael Malone. Michael
Malone. A lot of credit has got to go to Michael Malone. I mean, he has to be a front runner for coach of the year right now with what this team has survived. I mean, you have to give Jokic credit for what's happening here too, because he's such a facilitator and he's so good at getting other guys involved and getting their shots for them and getting them in positions where they have open looks or where they are in the right spot to hit their shot. And it makes you wonder, like, would Beasley on another team that had some injuries be doing what he's doing right now if he wasn't playing with a player like Jokic?
Mm-hmm.
Or some of these other guys, Torrey Craig.
Yeah, even just his composure. Last year, it was, I think, about the second half of the season where we started seeing those really weird games out of him. And then he really came out of it for that last quarter or so and balled out. But so it's nice this year that he got that weird phase out of the way after, you know, about a month. I don't know, what was that? Middle of November, about?
Yeah, when Jokic had that game in Memphis when he refused to shoot.
Yeah, and a string of games, really. But that's all behind him. You know, he like you pointed out, he banded these guys together. They all took form under his leadership here in December and have kept it going. And again, half of that has got to be his defense, the example that he's making on defense. It's really fun. I never thought I would say this. It's really fun just to watch a guy rotate. To watch Jokic make two good rotations where he's putting full effort. He knows where he should be going, and he puts all of his power into it. I mean, the other guys are seeing that as well on our team, and they're stepping it up as well. So, again, I mean, that goes to Malone too, I think. Something connected there. But for Jokic to keep that going no matter what he's facing, he had every excuse to cool his heels in December, and he did the exact opposite.
Yeah, to the point that he's now being brought up in MVP conversations, and I think rightly so. Probably not the front runner. There's been a lot of really good play by some of the league's best players this year. But, I mean, this kind of gets into this whole debate about how do you define most valuable player. Is there a player that's more valuable to his team than Nikola Jokic? Giannis?
Yeah, that's what's...
There's a couple...
I was asking myself the same thing. Because Anthony Davis, when you look at the stats, Anthony Davis, as much as there's like 10 guys who are totally balling out, Anthony Davis is just heads and shoulders above everybody. But you look at his team,
numbers are absurd.
Yeah, but no success.
Right.
What's going on there?
I don't know.
I don't know how to interpret that.
It goes into how you define most valuable player too. I mean, a lot of people do use the metric like Barkley was talking about a couple of weeks ago. If the Nuggets are the best team in basketball right now and their best player has been carrying them through a rash of injuries, you know, wouldn't that put them in him in the conversation for most valuable player?
Right.
It's not just a stats competition. Clearly, if it was a stats competition, he is not the most valuable player. There's a number of players putting up much bigger stats. But there's other things to take into account with Jokic too, and his efficiency and his playmaking, and the way that he can dominate a game without necessarily getting traditional stats like points or even assists, even with his high assist total. A lot of times, there's a lot of games through this stretch where Jokic could have had 15 assists if guys were hitting open shots.
Yep. So that's taking us to where we are right now. I don't think any Nuggets fan can be disappointed in the way that we've performed.
This stretch with all of these injuries couldn't have gone any better. I don't think. I mean, they had a couple of tough losses in there. They lost to the Clippers and the Spurs. I don't think any reasonable fan was expecting to run through this stretch of games without dropping a couple. All right, so we have Millsap's back. No, we don't have Millsap's back, but Millsap is back. I hope he doesn't have a back problem. That could be next. But Millsap's back. We have Barton and Harris just around the corner. Not so clear of a timeline for Isaiah Thomas yet. And I don't think there's any word about either of the rookies, Jared Vanderbilt or Michael Porter Jr. And there's seems to be some confusion about especially Michael Porter Jr.'s status for the season. But the core is about to be back together. The original starting lineup at the beginning of the season that the Nuggets planned on running with, Harris, Murray, Jokic, Millsap, and Barton will finally be together. What do you expect when we see the full core together, Jeremy?
I expect it to be good. I know there's that that apprehension where you say, oh, things are going well now. What's the chemistry going to be like? But I think it's only going to be better. I think they have a solid chemistry from top to bottom, because you could say the exact opposite, where, I mean, it all three of these guys didn't get injured all at once. We saw them all kind of fade in. Gary Harris even came back and then went back out again. And so all of these other guys have kind of stepped up, and we've seen that chemistry exists through and through. We started this season out with the best defense in the NBA, really. We were always right in there 1, 2, 3 for the first several weeks. And so then we started questioning, well, can our backup players keep it going? And they did. So I feel the exact opposite should be true, that we shouldn't be worried about our new guys coming back, that they should be able to keep waving the same flag that everybody else is, and probably even better. We know that these guys are all super talented, and I'm excited to see actually what Barton is able to do.
Yeah, he's the big kind of unknown too, because we don't really know how he was going to gel with the starters, even had he not been injured. But I'm with you. I'm really optimistic about this. We have Harris coming back, who is a defensive upgrade, or at least nothing is lost, but probably a defensive upgrade, depending on whether you're talking about Beasley or Craig. But Harris was playing fantastic defense before he went out, and a solid pro borderline all-star player when he's healthy and rolling along. So he's an upgrade there. Millsap is, definitely an upgrade and really helps with defense. And I guess to kind of summarize my overall point, it would be that the Nuggets are where they are right now because of their defense. Their offense is down from last year, but the reason they're the number one team in the Western Conference right now is because of the championship level defense that they've been playing. They're third in the NBA right now in opponents' points per game. And that's a big deal when you're a good offensive team playing at altitude who can put up a lot of points, especially at home.
Yep.
If you're playing that level of defense, you're a really tough out. And the players coming back are only going to improve them defensively. So even if there's a little stretch here where we have some rough shooting, I mean, I'm not expecting Barton to come back and light the roof on fire with his shooting. He's been out for months. It's going to take a little bit of time to get him back up to game speed, I think.
What I'm most interested in seeing Barton back is we've seen one of the biggest questions so far has been, can Murray handle point guard duties on this team? And then there's even the question of, well, Monte Morris looks like a fantastic point guard. Is there even a reason to maybe bring him up more often? And honestly, he has been. If you actually look at these lineups, he's playing a lot with the quote unquote starters or whoever's left standing. but there's a lot of question marks there as far as who handles the ball after Jokic. And Murray's gotten better, I think we would all have to admit, but I think Barton can step right in and just clearly be the second playmaker behind Jokic. And I think that really changes things up for Murray too. I think that's a positive for Murray. I don't think that takes anything away from Murray. I still think there's completely room for three playmakers. I've been really obsessed with this kind of Golden State Warriors setup. I think I've mentioned it in probably two out of our last three podcasts where that's a team with three guys who average five assists or more. And right. I think we have the right personnel for that. And I'm very interested to see what that does for our offense. So getting Barton back in there, I think puts Murray in an even better position from a playmaking standpoint, because he's allowed to not have to shoulder so much of the burden and just rather be more of an opportunistic kind of a playmaker, where Barton is dishing it over to him and then he's able to catch the defense off guard, as opposed to him having to create the tension and create the pressure himself.
Yeah, as good as Wancho has been in replacement, Wancho is primarily a shooter and kind of a standstill shooter. Yeah. He's not a playmaker. And he not to any level close to what Barton is going to bring. So you're right. I mean, that's a clear upgrade. There may be a little bit, like I said, there may be a little bit of a step back with Barton's shooting. Wancho's, been shooting so well over the last month or two, and that's been a big positive for the team. But he's just not the playmaker. He's not the slasher, and he's not the passer that Barton is.
Winners and losers.
All right, so now that the Nuggets are getting healthy again, let's talk about some of the winners and losers from the last couple of weeks, and then now looking forward as we get everybody back. Jeremy, give me a winner.
One winner that I didn't really, as much as I was watching it happen, I didn't really crystallize it in my mind is Beasley. He's a guy that I was kind of expecting you know, it's nice to see him play well, but not really expecting more than that. Like, okay, he's able to take advantage of a loose ball or something like that and make an athletic play to the other side of the court. But
yeah, since our last show, Nuggets have played four games. Beasley had 11 points, four rebounds against the Clippers. He had 22 points, seven boards, three assists against the Spurs in the loss. He had 21 points, three boards, and an assist in the win over the Spurs. And he had 15 points and a couple of boards and an assist in the win over the Suns. So he's been on a tear. I mean, those numbers for a bench player, part-time starter, are phenomenal. And I think well beyond what any of us were expecting from Beasley.
Right. That's basically a top 40 player right there based off of those stats. And I didn't even realize that he's averaging close to 30 minutes a game, which is basically a starter. And he's doing a really good job of it. So I thought, well, what other game stretch? Like, let's look at Harris. Let's compare how good he's been. And the numbers were almost identical. I picked out the best five-game stretch of Harris for this season and compared it to these last five games that essentially Beasley has been playing starters minutes in. And the point difference has been one. Beasley was 16.2. Harris was 17.2. The threes has been within 0.4. Beasley at 2.6 threes. Harris averaged three during that stretch. Both their true shooting percentage was 0.6. Incredible. Rebounds within 0.4 of each other. Assists, Harris had three during his stretch, but he also had 1.875 turnovers, and Beasley had 2.2 assists at only 0.6 turnovers. And then on defense, steals, 1.8 steals for Beasley over these past five and 1.5 for Harris. So you have Beasley is getting Harris level stats right now, which is a huge compliment. Harris is a fringe all-star player. And Beasley, in the first time ever in his career that he's getting regular heavy minutes, is performing at the level of Harris, roughly of yeah. Harris's best, honestly.
Beasley gets as much credit as anybody on the team, I think, for the fact that they've been able to keep winning through this stretch of injuries. Jokic and Murray, obviously, as the stars, have carried the team, but without Beasley's production, I don't know that we're, you know, quite as happy with the last month.
Yeah. What about you?
You know, I think the Jokic Murray tandem has really come together, solidified, and I think it's become clear, especially after these last two games and seeing Murray really start to take off and shooting come around, that, you know, we have a championship core in the works here. With when Harris comes back, and Barton as a wild card playmaker, a guy who can put up 30 points in a game if you need the scoring, I think this young core has what it takes. It's probably not going to be this year. We've talked about that, you know, a number of times over the course of the season so far, that, you know, they've been in first place now for a month or whatever, so it's hard to not start getting excited. But
yeah,
they are young. They're young, and there's a lot of season left.
Right, and the playoffs are a whole different game.
Totally different game. And we really don't know how Jokic ball will work in the playoffs. We don't know exactly what to expect from the Jokic-Murray two-man game, the Jokic-Harris two-man game, once they actually get to the playoffs. But yeah, it's hard to not be excited and to not think that the Nuggets have one of the best young 1-2 tandems in all of basketball. I mean, who are the alternatives? Embiid and Simmons, maybe, yeah. Booker and Ayton. You start thinking about the big man guard combos that are under, you know, 25, and the Nuggets have as bright a future as anybody. And I think this little stretch that we've had here has really helped Jokic and Murray to learn how to play well together.
Yeah, one thing that I really liked to see here was that for December, Jokic and Murray's plus minus has almost tripled in the fourth quarter.
Jokic and Murray have been winning games for them down the stretch. There hasn't been anyone else to rely on. there's been good play from other players. Monte had a couple of huge free throws to seal a game a couple days ago. Beasley's had some big shots down the stretch too, but you know, this team really rode Jokic and Murray and they responded, and that's exciting to see. Now, you know, the cavalry's back. We've got the, you know, reinforcements coming in, and there's no reason to expect that the Nuggets aren't going to be, you know, in the top half of this conference by the end of the season. All right, another winner, Jeremy.
I think just overall, you have to say the Nuggets' depth. I mean, that almost makes me feel like me as a fan is the real winner in the end. But there's one of the things about playoff ball. We were saying that playoff ball is different. Is it forces you to change things up, to adapt, to reach down deeper than you ever have before. And I'm just, you know, how deep does our well go? Like we keep, this is a terrible illustration. Maybe oil. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah,
no matter how far down we go, we keep striking oil. So there's not a minute during a playoff game. There's not a lineup that we can't put out there that can't perform, that can't be a quality level competitive lineup. No matter who, you know, tweaks their ankle in the first quarter and can't make it back, no matter what kind of situation happens where, you know, we have to put, say we put in Craig on defense to shut, maybe we're playing, can you guess who I'm about to say in the playoffs that Craig would come in and shut down?
Russell Westbrook?
Yeah, Russell Westbrook, that silly wabbit.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point now we can say that they should be able to survive any injuries from now till the end of the season, with the exception of Jokic. You can't replace somebody like that. And as we talked about, you know, so many of these bench players maybe have had the success they've had because of playing alongside Jokic. But with that one exception, if Jokic stays healthy, I mean, even Murray, if Murray goes down for a stretch, we have some guards now that can fill in and that can fill it up. So, you know, they're pretty bulletproof now, thanks to the depth that they've developed here. And that is only helpful, only going to be a good thing moving into the playoffs.
So moving on from good things, give me another bad thing, another loser.
Well, I got one more winner for you, which is that the Nuggets organization is a winner for cutting Swaggy P. Thankfully, now that all of our players are healthy, we don't have to have him on the team anymore. You hit some big threes, Swaggy. Thank you for that. We do appreciate that. But you're probably a better suited on a different team. So,
yeah, enjoy. Every Nuggets player deserves more applause than what Swaggy P was getting. That's so frustrating. He hits one three and the entire arena erupts, you know, and then Torrey Craig hits a three and crickets. Well, not crickets, but still, it's just so depressing to see a guy like that come in and just steal the hearts of our foolish Denver Nuggets fans.
Well, he's Swaggy P, you know. Elvis was in the building.
Yeah.
So these bench players that have played so well have given Mike Malone some difficult decisions to make here moving forward with the roster. There are not enough roster spots right now for players that have played well. Who are some of the odd guys out, do you think, once we have the full starting rotation back?
Trey Lyles is the first one that pops into my head. And even a few weeks back, I was still thinking there's going to be room for him just out of pure necessity. So you can assume Plumlee will play every single minute at center that Jokic is off the floor for. If we give Jokic, let's say, 32 minutes, it probably, I would assume it would be closer to maybe like 34. But let's say 32. That means there's 16 minutes there for Plumlee. But this is where I started thinking, like, of course, Lyles is still going to have to play some power forward. But the way Wancho has been playing, I think now maybe you give half of the power forward minutes to Plumlee because he's been incredible. So he can play 16 at center. He can play eight next to Jokic when Millsap is out. And then you give the other eight to Wancho. And he can play eight there, power forward, eight at small forward.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard to give minutes to Lyles over Wancho. There's going to be certain matchups where you're going to need Lyles' size bulk out there a little bit. But he has been such a defensive liability anyways that I'm not really sure that it's going to matter. I think just all around Wancho's game provides more benefit to the Nuggets than Lyles' game from his shooting to his hustle and his defense, yeah, and his rebounding.
And you might disagree with me, but the Lyles that I grew to appreciate last season was a guy who took over in a second unit when nobody else really had anything going on. And he was a guy that amidst chaos could perform. He could take the ball. He could shoot a three, or he was able to drive it to the hoop really well. This season is the exact opposite of chaos when it comes to our bench. These guys are a squadron of well-trained military. Like they work so cohesively. To me, that's not the environment that Lyles did so well in. And I think because he's kind of being confined in these different ways where he has to fit into a regimented offense and defense, that it's definitely highlighting some of his drawbacks. And unfortunately, it's not giving light to any of his strengths or much light to any of his strengths.
Yeah. I mean, he's still a really young player too. So I don't want to like say we're closing the book on Lyles, but the Nuggets just have too many options right now that are better, quite frankly. And I think that's what it'll come down to. And there'll be certain matchups, like I said, where somebody will be dinged up or they'll be playing a team with a couple extra bigs or something where Lyles will be needed. But yeah, I think moving forward, we're going to see a lot less of Trey Lyles.
IT, Isaiah Thomas. He even tweeted recently that his job is player development. And as much as that's a joke or whatever, I'm not so sure it is. Yeah. Like, first of all,
player coach,
he was supposed to be back by now. Right. So now the question mark on his health is like 20 times bigger in my mind. He might never play again. I don't know. So he might not even physically be able to make it back on the court all this season. It's the only season that he signed with us. And even if he does, that it's a hard situation. I imagine he will find minutes, but his, what's the phrase? His, the rope that he's playing with is going to be extremely tight.
Yeah. I mean, let's say he comes back. Let's just say I have no information about this. Best case scenario, let's say he comes back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
At that point, most likely Harris and Barton will be back. And, you know, unless there's been some other injuries, but let's just assume we get a little bit of decent luck and we don't have any more injuries for at least a couple of months or a month. Who's he taking minutes from? Like, you can't take minutes from Monte Morris at this point. He is one of the most efficient point guards in all of basketball right now. He's been one of the stories of the NBA this year. National people know the name Monte Morris now because of his quality play. And the future looks bright for him. The Nuggets want to keep developing him. I mean, what benefit is there to putting IT in over Monte Morris right now?
Yeah, I think it's one of these things that I don't think you approach it logically or mathematically, even where you carve out, you know, okay, so we take down Morris's minutes from, you know, 26 to 20. It's to me, it's something more of, you know, you need to get IT in if you're Malone, you need to get him on the floor at some point. So you stick to your normal rotation and you put in Morris for Murray or for Harris. And if he has a bad 3 minutes or something like that, you yank him and you put IT in. It wasn't necessarily part of the schedule that, you know, IT starts the second quarter or something like that, but you have to. It's almost, I hate to call it an emotional choice, but because IT is who he is and the history that he has of how good of a player he is, you just have to find ways to get him in. And it starts to be less logical and more emotional is a bad word for it. Just more in the moment.
Dictated by game situation and circumstance.
Right. Situational. Yeah. Right. Less logical, more situational.
But think about what this says about Monty Morris's play. I mean, when we came into the season, we were just kind of hoping to, you know, tread water with Morris until IT would be healthy. At least in my mind, I mean, I thought it was like a given that IT would be the backup point guard on the team and would be the type of player who might be on the floor, you know, the last half of the fourth quarter or something in certain games, like depending on how he was playing or depending on the matchup, that he would be like he would have a major role on this team. And at this point now, I think that's in question.
That is crazy. This is Monte Morris, the great Rio Grande Valley Viper.
Right.
Taking minutes from basically the MVP of, what was that, 2015?
Yeah. But to quote my boy Billups, it wasn't Billups, but to quote Iverson, ball don't lie. Like, Morris is balling. And you can't, I mean, he's proven that he's an NBA player. Ball don't lie, scoreboard, whatever cliche you want to use.
Right.
Monte's been great, and he's the future. You know, he's young. He's cheap. IT was probably only going to be here for 1 year anyway. It doesn't make a lot of sense to be starting IT or for IT to take Monte's minutes unless, as you said, you know, game circumstance dictates it or we have some other injuries or something like that. But I think IT's been a loser through this stretch. Any other losers you want to talk about?
Just the haters and the doubters. This was their opportunity. This is what they were calling for. They were all saying, just wait for it. The support falls out and Jokic will give up and the defense will turn back into their famous, you know, 28th worst defense. And sorry, guys, you lose out. You lost.
So we're 7 games away from the halfway point of the season. I think it's safe to say that the Nuggets are here for real.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, they have to be a part of every playoff plan that there is. I'm sorry, half of a season? Well, let's get there. You know, let's play these 7 games. Let's get there. Let's see. This is a very interesting time getting all of our players back. So we'll see how we do in 7 games. But
now, for some reason, a basketball haiku by Nicholas Herzog.
Murray's back, haters. Dropping threes like maple leaves. Sorry, not sorry.
Over and under.
So our first question is, over under 10 wins in January for the Nuggets.
So the Nuggets have 16 games this month in January, pretty heavy workload actually. And they kick it off with some kind of back and forth. They are at home for the Knicks and then they go to the Kings and then they're back at home for the Hornets. How do you think they do in that stretch?
I think they go 2-1 here. Mm-hmm. I think the Knicks and the Hornets in Denver are close to locks, and I can see him dropping the game in Sacramento. Sacramento has been one of the surprise teams of the year this year, and that game on the road, I think could cause them some issues. We might also not have the full roster back yet. If Barton is back for that game, you know, maybe his shooting isn't there yet. There's some kinks to work out. I don't think that'll be nearly as big of a problem against the Knicks, but
yeah,
probably 2-1.
Yeah, I'm going to say 2-1. Also, the Hornets, for whatever reason, seem to just get us. And that, I think, will more likely, that's the third game into January, is more likely, I think, when we'll see Harris back, Barton back. So after that three games, they go on a road trip. They go to the Rockets, the Heat. Oh, actually, then they get the Clippers at home, and then back away at the Suns. So what do you think for that little series?
I think at the Rockets is going to be tough. The Rockets are, 9-1 in their last 10 games.
They're doing so good right now.
They're really coming on, and they always struggle against Houston in general, and in particular in Houston. So they'll probably drop that one. I could see him bouncing back and beating the Heat. And then they've struggled with the Clippers this year, too. I could see him winning that game. It's kind of a statement game, you know, a game where they take that game seriously because they've had some issues with the Clippers. And then I think the Suns are another team that they should definitely beat, pending something crazy happening. So probably 3-1 in that stretch.
I'm going to go 2-2. I'm going to give the Clippers one. Just to be pessimistic here, if the Clippers are healthy, they're just such a good team. They're a team that's not supposed to be healthy. They're a bunch of, you know, slapped together veterans that clickety clack every step that they take. But they're all healthy right now, and they're playing really well. So then we get a home stretch where we get the Blazers. That'll be a good game. And then we get the Warriors. And then we get to finish it off with the Bulls and the Cavs. What do you think about that?
I'm going to say 3-1 on that stretch, too. I don't see the Bulls or the Cavs beating the Nuggets in Denver, playing too good at home right now. They'll be fully healthy at that point, pending some other disaster. So there's two wins. And then I say they split with the Blazers and Warriors.
Right.
I'm gonna predict they beat the Warriors again because Mike Malone hasn't lost to the Warriors yet.
Ooh.
And the Warriors really have not come on yet either. So I can see this being another statement win and something that kind of carries a narrative moving forward into the playoffs. You know, something like the Nuggets end up facing the Warriors. You know, they'll have this glossy record against them in the regular season or something.
Yeah, I'm going to split the Blazers Warriors as well. I would think we would lose one of those. And I would expect to win one of them. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody in Denver is actually that scared of the Warriors. We know our history with them. So if we lose to the Blazers, I think we would hope that we would knock off the Warriors. So count me in the same way. I'm going to go 3-1 in that stretch. And then there's, again, some kind of back and forth to end things out. We go at the Jazz. And then we get the Suns back on our court. Then we get the Sixers. And then we have a road trip to end it, the Grizzlies and the Pelicans.
Yeah, I think this stretch is a little trickier for me because there's a game like against the Jazz, who have been a disappointing team this year. Maybe one of the most disappointing teams in the NBA, maybe. I had them second in the West in my preseason rankings. Now that might've been dumb on my part to put him that high, but I don't think it was that out of the norm for people to think that they were going to take another step forward this year. And they're currently out of playoff race. So having said that, at this point, you know, we're projecting here a month out, 3 weeks out, whatever it is. But I think it's likely the Jazz are going to be playing a little bit better, at some point this season, and it could very well be during this stretch, and they're always really
they are right
to
now
at home. So yeah, they're starting to come around. So I'm gonna call that a loss. Suns again, I'm pretty confident in the Nuggets' ability to beat the Suns every time they play them this year.
Yeah, they're kind of like our statement game, I think. Like Jokic on Ayton is a lot of fun to watch. As much as he had had his way offensively with us his last game. Jokic was able to do kind of whatever he wanted on offense as well. So it's fun to watch that.
Then we have this Sixers game, which I think is going to be a major game and focal point for the even for a national audience here at the end of January. You know, still a couple months out from the playoffs. But what an interesting matchup between, you know, two of the best young centers in the NBA. I think the Nuggets make a statement in this game at home against the Sixers in, you know, something like a blowout win. I think we could see, you know, a fully healthy Nuggets team who wants to make a point that they're here, they're on the national stage, and they're for real. And then I think they probably drop one of two at Grizzlies and Pelicans. Those are both games where those teams are very capable of putting up a great game at home. They probably drop one of them.
So. Yeah. So I'm going to think at the Jazz. That's a hard place for us to play at. I'm going to give that to the Jazz, and they're playing better right now. Gobert's finally found his rhythm. We'll see if Donovan Mitchell is able to get anything going again, but I think his stock was a little high at the end of last season. I think people were buying a stock that was overvalued. I think he's still a really good player, but so I'm going to give that one to the Jazz. The Suns take that. I'm going to give the Sixers game. I'm going to do a little, this is my hometown right now. Give them a little credit. All right. I want more than anything for 10 years of nothing but Nuggets and 76ers talk of a back and forth, kind of like we had with the Cavs and the Warriors. This is some of the most fun basketball in the world to watch. So give that to me for a decade, please. And then split the Grizzlies and Pelicans. Like you said, I think they'll have Elfrid Payton back, and the Pelicans were actually rocking people when they had Payton in there. He really clicked with that lineup. And without him, it just seems to be this weird, like we mentioned before with Anthony Davis, this weird, like, huge stats out of him and Drew Holiday, but it's not really congealing to actually have team success. I think Elfrid Payton might be, as much as the unexpected hero of the team, the guy to kind of bring it all together.
Yeah, so I've got him at 11 wins in January, so over 10. That would put him at 34-16 going into February, which sets them up as, you know, probably in first place in the West still, or right near the top, and really, really coasting toward the playoffs.
I've got them at 9, so I'm going to take the under. 9 wins in January, still 9-7. Yep, that's enough to keep the train rolling.
All right, over under Murray averaging 20 points a game by the end of the year. Now, reason I'm bringing this up is that only 4 Nuggets guards have ever averaged 20 points a game or more, which I find to be shocking. And Allen Iverson was 2 of those 4 seasons. So they've really only had 3 different players who have averaged guards who have averaged 20 points a game. Is this a year we see another one added? Is Murray, what we've seen out of him the last couple of games, is he finally getting rolling? Is he able to pull his average up from about 18 points a game, 18 and a half points a game, to 20 points a game by the end of the season, Jeremy?
I'm going to stick to my guns. Before the season started, I put him at 20.5 points a game for the season. And I see that happening. So count me in.
I'm going to say that he does as well. I mean, I think the fact that he's at 18 and a half points a game with as bad as his 3-point shooting has been for most of the season, means that if he just gets back up to his historic averages, even something like he's at 33% right now from 3, which was really helped by the last 2 games where he went from something like 27% to 33% just over the stretch of 2 games. But if he's up closer to 40% or 38-40%, like he should be, like we all expect him to be, you know, that's easily worth another couple of points per game. So I think we're going to see Murray top out over 20 points a game and lead the league, or lead the Nuggets in scoring by the end of the season. Okay, so Monte Morris has averaged 26 minutes a game in December. Obviously, there's been injuries. Over under 20 minutes a game moving forward as the Nuggets get healthy. What do you think, Jeremy?
I'm going to very strongly take the over here. because I don't think he was a guy who he's the backup point guard. So it's not necessarily so much like he filled in for Gary Harris or something like that. And now he's gotten a ton of minutes. Whereas like a Beasley, that would definitely be true. That was a guy who was slotted at almost no minutes, like no real definition of his backup role, and was able to make the most of this. So I'm still expecting him to play about 24 minutes per game. So maybe he drops about 3 minutes from what we saw before. You know, maybe closing out fourth quarters, we might not see as much as of that. But as far as the normal routine of him subbing in and subbing out, I think that's going to hold pretty much true. What about you?
Yeah, I think because I think Murray's numbers have been probably higher than they're going to be moving forward. He's been playing a lot of 40-minute games. Yeah. You know, I think maybe we see him drop down to 36, 37 minutes a game, and that makes up for some of the time that Monte will be giving back. So, yeah, I'm going to take the over as well. And maybe this is almost even more just hopeful than it is a prediction. Just I really want the Nuggets to make sure that they get him the playing time that he's earned, because he's been a key component to what they've done this year. And I think the future is super bright for him. So I would hate to see him get buried on the bench because of the amount of depth that this team has. And that's going to be especially true for when IT comes back. We'll just have to see how Malone's able to juggle those things. IT is Malone's boy too, so I'm sure he's going to want to get him in, but I hate to see that happen. If it sacrifices development for Monte, who's proven himself.
Well, IT is never going to play in a Nuggets uniform, so I don't think you have anything to worry about.
Okay, so we're going to introduce a new segment where we call out national media members or give them credit for their good or bad takes. We call this
Bad Take, Good Take.
So our first bad take, Bill Simmons recently said that he would take Buddy Hield over Jamal Murray today. You agree with him, Jeremy?
No, but I'm not as much of a homer in this case. I remember when we were drafting, it was one of those two guys I really wanted. So
right,
kind of every step of the way, I have felt somewhat swappable with Hield to Murray, but with Murray, there's that ceiling that you know he can tap that Hield, I don't believe, has. Hield is maybe the most unathletic guard in the NBA, starting guard. And he's quite a bit older. I realize that the argument is for today, but Murray's just got that extra gear that you know he can go into. And this is a team that doesn't necessarily need it. So it might even come down to a situation where with the Kings, I think they probably would want Hield over Murray. But if you're on the Nuggets and you have Jokic leading the team and Gary Harris and Paul Millsap and all these guys, I think Murray you want as your X factor, who can put up a 50-point night when you're playing possibly the best team in the East, the Celtics.
Look, Hield's been really good this year. He's averaging 20 points a game on 42% shooting from three. He also averages 85% from the free throw line, the same as Murray. So nothing, you know, we don't want to take anything away from Hield. The thing is, first of all, his hair is terrible. So that alone means I would rather have Murray on my team, because I would hate to have to watch that mop bounce around.
First thing 30 minutes and a night. Last thing.
What's that?
First thing and last thing.
Second of all, Murray has definitely taken a step forward this year as a playmaker. Five assists a game, and he's been getting better. And that distinguishes him from Hield, who doesn't do much playmaking. He's pretty much a spot-up three-point shooter at this point in his career anyway. And Murray, as you said, has a much higher ceiling. Murray is capable of scoring 50 in a game, as we've seen him nearly hit a couple of times this year. And this is in a season that he hasn't been shooting particularly well so far. So I think we're seeing Murray on the way up, we might be seeing the best of what Buddy Hield will ever be in the NBA right now. But it is close, actually. And it's interesting that they were, you know, the conversation was about these two guys in the Nuggets spot when they picked a couple of years ago. And both of those draft picks have panned out for their respective teams. So there is an argument to be had. But yeah, I agree. I think even putting Homer bias aside, I'd rather have Murray on my team. Another bad take that we heard this week was that Michael Porter Jr. is going to play this year. This was stated on the Brian Windhorst podcast. He had Jackie McMullen on. Now, as far as we know, there isn't any inside information coming out of Denver that indicates this. Have you heard anything about Michael Porter Jr. playing for sure this year, Jeremy?
No. No, not at all. This would be one of those super secret informant situations that wouldn't be caught dead being pointed out of a group for saying this to Windhorst or McMullen. But you still, I don't know. I think they're speculating as much as I am. Here's the thing. I expect Connelly to make sure that Michael Porter Jr. plays if he's healthy. So I know there's a lot of people who actually feel that he might not, that even if he is healthy, they just still feel it's not necessarily worth the risk and just give him, you know, the entire season off. I don't feel that way. And so that's where I think Windhorst and McMullen might be coming from here, where they think no matter what, as long as he is healthy, he is going to see the court at least for a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is the kind of the definition of a bad take, which is just stating something is going to happen when you have absolutely no information about it whatsoever. Like, they have no idea if he's going to play this year. They have no idea what his health is unless they know something we don't. But I think that's unlikely because the Nuggets have been pretty tight-lipped about Michael Porter Jr.'s health throughout this entire process. And I don't see why they would feel the need to leak anything to a national reporter at this point in the season with all the other good things that are going on and stuff. It doesn't make any sense to me. So this is just them being hopeful, I think, more than anything. And just making, you know, sort of blind assumptions. So I think more than likely we won't see him this year. I know some on the Stiffs have been pretty adamant about that for most of the season too, that this is probably isn't the year we see his
right
NBA debut, but I'm still hopeful. I'm just excited to see him on the floor. I just want to see him, you know, chuck a three and see what he looks like, you know, running around on the court and what he might bring to the team, even if that means he's only playing like 7 or 8 minutes a game, you know, in March and April or something like that. But then you have to ask yourself too, like, what value is that if this team really is making a playoff run? Like, let's say they're the second seed in, you know, 3 weeks out from going into the playoffs. You know, is bringing in a Michael Porter Jr. 7 or 8 minutes a game over?
So here's the value, I think, to getting Michael Porter out there, even if he's not necessarily helping the team win games. And I don't think he should be getting heavy minutes unless he is. That's just a really weird situation. I really don't see that happening, where all of a sudden he comes into a team that's fighting for first place in the West and just completely starts dominating. That would be great. But so here's the value. Here's the situation. And I think you can only find it if you look at this from Tim Connelly's perspective. They took a risky pick on a guy who had more upside than every player in the draft, except for maybe two guys. And Tim Connelly is right in the middle of building a championship team where he might be one big time free agent away from having a championship. Or you also have to realize that as much as he's kind of the head of the team, he's still under the Kroenkes. So trying to play this game of doing what's best for the team, but also trying to get the Kroenkes to open up some more money and things like that, investing in facilities, to be able to show a healthy Michael Porter Jr. to the rest of the league, to all the players, they see this young buck who has talked about playing well or out there playing, to see the Kroenkes, to have them see him out there playing. To me, it makes the future of the Nuggets organization just that much more enticing. And whether you're a player that wants to sign here, a coach that wants to coach here, or Kroenke who wants to strike when the iron is hot and invest in the team that could get him more money back, since it seems like that's what's most important to him, which is fine.
Oh, shade.
It is what it is. There's worse owners than that.
Hold on. Did you just call Michael Porter Jr. a young buck?
Yeah, I called him a young buck. He's a young buck.
He is a young buck.
We're He's old. Walking around in his fancy Reeboks.
You know you're old when you start referring to guys as young bucks. Oh, yeah. Sigh.
I'm hurt.
All right, we did it. Episode 6 in the books.
Okay. Is that it?